Good morning. Well, the Midway City Council met yesterday until just before midnight, so I appreciate that Mayor Celeste Johnson got up early to let us know what happened. Good morning to you.
Good morning.
So the big news yesterday was that the $4 million bond proposal to bury 8/10 of a mile of power line in Midway failed, and that means it will not be on the ballot this November?
That is correct. The vote needed to be a supermajority because it's for a bond, and that required four affirmative votes, and it was 3-2. So the measure did not pass, and now the decision before us will be how far do we want to take this court proceeding with the appellate process. So, but as far as the bond and the ballot this November, that's a done deal.
Yeah. So can you tell us who voted against? Do you recall?
Oh, yeah. So against was Lisa Orm and Jeff Drury, both council members. In fact, all five of the council members, and I just have to say this at the onset, really gave this matter such soul-searching thought that there is an amazing amount of good information that was brought forward, and I'm very impressed with the council for this. This was not something that we have looked at any point lightly. It was a very big decision. We took it literally to the 12th hour. We had to make that decision tomorrow night or last night because of the timeline for getting a bond on the ballot. So all of that time has been used up until tomorrow night or last night to determine the pros and cons of putting it on a ballot. I think the overriding concern for Council Member Drury in not putting it on the ballot was that many of the founding families have seen their property values go up and up and up, and that means their taxes have gone up, and you know, perhaps their income hasn't. And it would have been you know, an additional pressure for them. For Council Member Orm, I think her overriding concern was that there were still so many unanswered questions. And that's one of the reasons going to the appellate court could still be advantageous. And then we would get all of those questions answered. Things like, what are the legitimate costs of this? Is it truly critical? You know, there's just many questions still.
Tell me, what's going on then with the court's proceedings and the appellate process? Why is it there?
We filed with the appellate court because the Utility Facilities Review Committee ruled it pretty much all in Rocky Mountain Power's favor, and we felt like there were some real loopholes that they weren't considering, including the fact that the bids were $10 million apart. So it was a crazy span of pricing, and there were errors found in the bid specs. The Utility Facilities Committee didn't make any rulings on any of that. So we opted for a stay, and they denied that. We then went to the appellate court for the stay. And what that did is really grant us the opportunity to have this in-depth look at putting a bond measure on the ballot. It also gives us the opportunity to be heard in an actual court of law. And, you know, if all of the things go our way and it's next year, then this topic may go back to a bond at that point, because then a lot of the concerns that some of the council members had would all be resolved by that point.
Yeah, at some point, though, you know, the power line's got to get built underground or above ground. So how long can you wait?
Well, that's the question, and that is also a very big concern. Even our expert that we have had advising us has said, no, this is a project that probably should have happened 5 years ago. So they're behind the eight ball on this one. And they know it, and we know it, and we're not trying to delay the power lines. Because I also sit on the Heber Light and Power Board, right? So based on the information we're getting on that board, you know, they probably can't wait more than another 2 years at the very most. And that's probably stretching it. I mean, we've come close to our maximum capacity this summer with all this heat. So it's a concern, and that's another really big concern.
Yeah. So it sounds like there is a willingness to revisit a bond in the future, or is the council done with this?
No, we're not done, and that's maybe the painful part. I think we all feel like we've been dragged through the mud on this one because it's gone on for so long. But I know there are several council members who are very anxious to go to the appellate court because they just feel like the process has been so slanted against us. And the way the state statute reads, it will stay slanted. And so there's this almost ethical desire to take this through to the end and perhaps get the state statute changed so that other communities in the future aren't faced with some of the same, for lack of a better word, strong-arming that we were.
Yeah. And again, I understand, there's certainly concern about just the aesthetics of it all, and we've all been in that position where maybe we've spilled paint on the driveway or something, and it's just like you walk by it every day and you're just like, oh my gosh, that stain on the driveway. And you know what? And then it goes away. I mean, isn't that going to eventually just go away? We don't even notice power lines there's some big ones in Park City. It's just like, unless they block your view as you're trying to pull out of an intersection, you don't even see them.
Yeah, there's certainly that line of reasoing that in after time, it's something that you don't see. And Rocky Mountain Power believes that's one of the reasons that the real estate values, while they're affected immediately when it happens, over time, they recoup the value and are the same as any of the other homes in the same neighborhood. So, yeah, there's theories for that. And then there's theories that, we will never, ever, ever have our quaint little Midway rural feel again if these great big huge poles come through. So yeah, there's it seems like such a first world problem, right, that we're battling over here. But I think that there are a couple components, and one is that a municipality really needs a reasonable amount of time in the statute. It's 60 days. That's nowhere near reasonable. A municipality can't sort through that kind of a decision that quickly. And then there's not just the aesthetics, but the safety value. I mean, we're looking at all these fires in California and everything that's going on above ground. And truly, when I go to my board meetings, there's always a report on what lines were down and why, and it's always issues dealing with being above ground. All the studies show that underground power lines in the long run are cheaper because they don't have to be repaired so often.
Let's move on. Another topic that had a lot of discussion was the request for $1.5 million from Midway's open space bond to help fund a conservation easement on the Mountain Spa property along River Road. A lot of public comment in favor of preserving the open space, but also a lot of concern over access to water. So why is water such a big issue here?
The landowner several landowners back, sold the water off that land. So there is not enough water on that land to support agricultural use. Partly why there's water now is that it's being leased to our dairy farmer who uses his water to keep it green for his cows. So water here, as is everywhere, is always a big component of any project. Because you have to make sure that you've got enough water to sustain whatever's going to happen there. And the interesting thing about this parcel is that while the current landowner has been selling it, they've been sort of piecing together some water rights so that it would have enough water. And I believe we're up to 4 water attorneys now trying to look at all of that and see exactly how much water they have. So if we're going to use open space bond money on this land so that it can remain in agricultural use, I think everyone's just concerned that it legitimately has water to support that agricultural use.
So the property would contain two large estate lots, the conservation easement, public trails, and lots for a handful of homes. City officials say that it's unusual how complex this property is. Again, it sounds, is that why? Just because of all of the wheeling and dealing with the water rights?
That is part of it. But I think the other big component that makes it unusual and complicated is we've had two other projects come before us to use open space bond money, and they were very straightforward. Here's a piece of land. We want to sell the development rights and put it under a conservation easement. It has water. This is how much money we need from the city. This is how much we need from other sources. Done. This particular project, because of the nature of it, the very center, it's sort of a backwards L-shaped property, and right at the corner of that L is a resort zone, which is the mountain spa. So there's some natural geological hot pots there, and that middle section of about I think it's about 17 acres is going to be developed as a resort with this particular project. So we're looking at preserving land around it, which is what's on our view corridor on our main collector road. There's the large section on River Road, the large section on Bergie Road, and yet this resort in the middle. Because of the land formation, you're not going to see the resort component on those sides, and so it will very much look like open space land. But there's going to also be homes. So this is the first time we've looked at an open space project that does involve some homes and then this resort, but that is how we're going to be able to pay for the project. So it's unique in that sense.
All right. Real quick, the decision was moved to September 1st. What needs to be worked out then before it gets approved?
So the group that's purchasing it and working with Summit Land Conservancy needs a letter of intent that we will fund this project if the following conditions are met. And the council just felt like we needed our staff to write that letter of intent before we actually made a motion. So it got moved to September 1st so that we would have time to study that letter between now and then and feel good about the different conditions that would be put in place.
Okay. Hey,
I would say the council unanimously feels good about the project.
All right. I've got to leave it there. Celeste, I appreciate your time this morning.
Thanks, Leslie. It's good talking to you.
That's Midway Mayor Celeste Johnson. You're listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW. Well, back in February, KPCW reported that on the story that six bull elk that were shot and killed in the Snyderville Basin, no meat nor antlers were taken as part of the slaughter, and it was done outside of the hunting season. The community rallied, and more than $21,000 was raised in a GoFundMe account for information leading to the arrest of and conviction of the poacher or poachers. On the phone with an update and details about a pending deadline about what to do with the money since no arrests have been made is one of the folks responsible for the GoFundMe account, John Noslowski. Good morning to you, John. Did I get that name kind of right?
Pretty dang close. I couldn't say it right till I was 12, so I try not to get offended.
Okay. Well, tell us how it came to be that you started this GoFundMe account.
Honestly, we were just angry. The gentleman who lives right next to where it happened posted something on Nextdoor, and we were just aghast. Felt like we needed to do something, and my neighbor Andrea, who I had never met before, basically said, well, you know, money talks. Let's put some together and try and use it as an incentive to put this guy in jail.
Yeah, so 6 months have passed, no arrest. So what's the deal then with the $21,500 last time I checked in the account?
Yep, that's exactly it. Well, our intent was to, you know, use it as an incentive to bring the guy to justice, as well as use it as a disincentive to anyone trying to do this again. So if you're thinking about poaching in Park City or Snyderville Basin, you're going to see what we've done here, and you know that we're going to come after you. You know the community is going to get together, and we're going to do our best to put you in jail. But like you said, unfortunately, no arrests have been made despite the really great work of the folks at DWR. And so we're going to do exactly what we promised to from day one, which is either return the money to the people who gave it to us or donate it to wildlife charities. You know, we've had a lot of really good suggestions about which charities would be the best recipients, but we've kind of settled on two local wildlife charities, that being Save People, Save Wildlife. Those are the folks putting up all the fencing around I-80. And the Northern Utah Wildlife Rehabilitation Center, just because they're local, you know, they have visible impacts and, you know, all the money goes exactly where it's supposed to. So what I've asked and what I really appreciate you giving me the opportunity to do today is to tell all the donors, hey, please let me know. We want to hear from you. You know, this money is still yours. It's either going to go back to you or it's going to go to the charities like we promised. And I really just need to hear people's preferences. So so thank you for giving me this opportunity.
Yeah, so you've got more than 230 people to contact. Are you just, what, sending them out emails? Because you have it through the GoFundMe account? Or
exactly. You know, we're posting updates on the website. We're sending out emails. I'm trying to get on the radio, trying to get in the media, just to, you know, make sure we're doing what we're supposed to with these funds and hopefully doing some good.
Yeah. Have you heard back from people? I mean, what are they telling you to donate it?
So we have 232 donors. I've heard from 23 people thus far. Mm. So not very good luck getting to folks, but everyone loves deadlines. And the closer we get to ours, which is next week, I'm hoping that we hear from folks. We kind of needed to settle on what we would do as a default option. And just out of we settled on donating the money if we don't hear back from folks by August 24th.
So that
that's something. Go ahead.
Oh, so that it's August 24th. Is that the deadline you said?
Yeah, exactly. You know, GoFundMe is not a bank. There's all sorts of federal laws that I don't necessarily understand. But we had 6 months, and 6 months is up next week. So we're doing what we can.
Okay. Did you ever get any leads on the case?
Absolutely. We got lots of leads on the case. Everything from the folks who were living right there to folks who heard or saw things to, you know, there was some physical evidence that was picked up. But the last thing I want to do is make Officer Moser's and DWR's investigation harder. So I'm just going to let them speak for themselves on what happened with me in the investigation. But yes, absolutely. Information came in once the reward got out there, and you know, just from that and from everyone I talked to with their wonderful tips, you know, people are paying a lot more attention now. People know about the DWR UTIP hotline. People know that, you know, if you see something, say something, and hopefully snap a photo if you feel safe to do so.
Yeah.
So I really feel like this reward has made Park City and the Snyderville Basin a safer place for animals, because everyone is a lot more aware of what's going on around here.
Any guesses what this was all about, though? I mean, why shoot something if you're not taking the antlers or the meat?
I got plenty of guesses, but I don't want to speculate. But I do know for a fact that the person who did this is a coward. And regardless of your intentions, if you do that, you're a bad human being. And hopefully, well, if you did that, you probably told your friends, and hopefully the reward will make those friends flip still. But it really was an unfortunate way to lose these big boys. But it really did bring the community together. I mean, I'm a hunter. Andrea, the my neighbor who helped me put together this fund, you know, she's a vegan. You know, we're unlikely friends, but we banded together with this because we were both mad as heck. So across the spectrum, you know, red, blue, purple, whatever, everyone's angry about this. And it really fired us all up and made us work together to make this happen.
Okay. It's still not too late, because the deadline is August 24th. If somebody does have some information, there's $21,500 waiting for you to lead to the conviction of whoever had done this. How do they let you know what they want done with their money if, in fact, that deadline does pass? Do they email you?
Just reply. Mm-hmm. Yeah, reply to the emails we've sent. Go onto the GoFundMe website, post there. You know, I'm easy to find. Our contact information is everywhere. So any way you want to get to me, I'm happy to hear from you.
Okay. Anything else, John, you wanted to mention?
No, just thanks for the opportunity to get this information out there.
Okay. Hey, well, good luck. Again, we got another week. Thanks for your time this morning.
Thank you. Have a great day.
KPCW News Time now, 8:52.